Question. What do you think would be considered the best novel ever written? I'll let you ponder that as I welcome you to episode 25 of Navigating the Energies of Life, a podcast that looks at how the energies of the Maya calendar are at work in the world and how they apply to daily lives. This is Marguerite Paquin, continuing with the podcast to accompany my horoscope blog that tracks the days of this calendar. The emphasis for both is on connections between the energies of this calendar and events going on in the world, and ways in which these energies relate to personal lives. A brief overview of this timekeeping system can be found in episode 1. I'm going to keep you in suspense about that question of the novel until later on in this podcast. But one question that is sometimes asked about this time frame that we're in right now, which is the Manik or Deer Trisena, is why is this energy represented by different symbols? The answer is that many different language groups followed the energies of this calendar, and in some villages still do, in parts of Guatemala. The basic 260-day cycle has never been broken. And some, like the classic Maya elite, used quite sophisticated or even abstract symbols to track the days of the calendar. Others used more readily identifiable images of things such as deer, monkeys, or rabbits to keep track of the days. So many groups would depict the energy of Manik, for example, as a deer or stag, while the classic Maya, the carvers of the great temple sites and monuments, depicted this same energy as a partially closed hand holding the sun. But regardless of the style of the symbols used, the core of this system consists of a cycle of 260 days that represents interconnections between 20 unique solar forces in combination with 13 unique numerical powers to create a count of days called a zolkin. Each of the 260 days in the cycle is unique, and every person carries the energetic imprint of the forces that were in play at the time of their birth. The 260-day cycle can be further broken down into groups of 13 days, with each group of days running from 1 to 13 being called a trisena for 13, and each one having a particular set of characteristics. The overall 260-day cycle contains 20 of these 13-day periods, each with a different theme. Those who attune themselves to these energies and really start to pay attention to them will often start noticing so-called coincidences or surprises that tie in with the energetic influences of those days. In fact, the Maya, both ancient and contemporary, thought of, or sometimes still think of, the days as deities, and often address them or call on them specifically in terms of rituals and ceremonies. But it doesn't have to be formal or ritualistic. One thing that I often notice, for example, is that someone could be highlighted in a news report or on a documentary or in a movie. And when I check, I find out that it is either the very day of their Maya birth energy or very close to it. This happens often, as it did just a couple of days ago on the second day of this trisena. While channel surfing, I came upon an old Elvis Presley movie that I'd never seen before, called Follow That Dream. It was filmed when he was just 26, and he was truly in his prime. Gorgeous to look at, of course, fit as a fiddle at that time, and portraying a character who was a kind of genius at negotiating or finding harmonious solutions to problems. Pure fantasy, classic Elvis. But why I bring this up is that, right on schedule, there it was, Elvis's Maya birth energy to Lemat, the second day of this Trisina. To step aside and have a look at this, apart from the fact that there it was again, a day lord delivering something to do with someone born on that day, this time it delivered a frame of reference that really highlighted the nature of that energy. Writ large, so to speak, within the context of that movie. Let me elaborate a little. When looking at any given day and the energy influences associated with it, there are many different levels, with the first being the day itself, the numerical power and the day sign as in to Lemat, and the second being the placement within the Trisina and the influence of the Trisina on the day. So for Elvis, we will look at the energy of the number 2 plus the energy of Lemat and how they fit together. And then look at the influence of the Manique Trisina. The day itself could be translated in a number of ways. It can be dynamic star, which he certainly was. Elvis shone with a rare intensity that mesmerized the world, except for those who thought he was just too shocking, in which case that too energy might be considered polarizing. In any case, he shot to the upper echelons of superstardom at lightning-fast speed and to a height that has never really been surpassed and will certainly never be forgotten. And as he did so, a whole new era was born. There is the world pre-Elvis and the world post-Elvis. And as far as music and entertainment are concerned, those worlds are quite different from one another. But the energy of the number 2 also represents togetherness and reciprocity and even harmonization, something that was quite central to that movie I stumbled upon. Elvis, the person, was known for his kindness and generosity. And in that movie, Follow That Dream, these kinds of qualities were front and center, as his character in the movie was a master at basically neutralizing opposing forces, even the bad guys, and finding ways to get back to balance and harmony. It was quite fascinating to see, since not only did that movie air on his Maya birthday, but it vividly illustrated the very nature of that birth energy. And since the Manique Trisina, this Trisina, emphasizes the same kind of reciprocity-oriented energy, it was interesting to see that that was coming back into view at this time, right smack on his Maya birthday. While watching it, I couldn't help but think about his birth energy and the whole idea of how an individual's birth energy can not only influence the direction of a person's life, but also it can factor so strongly into how people see the world and interact within it. I should mention as well that the energy of the number 2, when depicted glyphically by the classic Maya, was rendered as a person's face with a headdress that looked like a hand. The hand looked very much like the hand used to depict Manique itself, so it seems that they saw a strong connection between that concept of harmonization and reciprocity associated with Monique and the energy of two. So it was like Elvis was working with a double dose of that. And he was apparently a twin, so there was that as well. So the Maya generally represented this day sign as a clenched hand that contains the sun, an image sometimes referred to as sun in hand, while other cultural groups, such as the Aztec, would show this same energy as a deer or stag. In classical Maya iconography, this day sign is depicted as a hand holding the sun, symbolically representing the hand of the great creator deity known as Itzamna, who was the patron of scribal arts and the sacred calendar and divination and esoteric knowledge, as well as being associated with agricultural fertility and curing. Also connected with this day sign is a Maya deity known as Buluk Chabtan, the god of the number 11, who was an earth deity known as a lord of forests, deer, and hunting. Within his name is the verb chab, meaning to do penance or sacrifice, possibly connected with the same idea of sacrifice that ties in with the deer's giveaway to provide life-giving sustenance. But this same verb generally means to create, and by extension ties in with the idea of strong creativity and generative powers. The overall meaning relates to such things as change, inspiration, and regeneration. The Maya concept of manzal ik, or manik, meaning passing through spirit to overcome death, also ties in with this idea. This concept is representative of energies that both sustain and inaugurate or shape life. The symbolism not only reflects the original energies of creation itself, but points to the importance of maintaining balance and harmony in dealings with the world in general. It has to do with the sacred rhythm of life and the concept of respectful give and take in order to honor and sustain abundance. It also ties in with the idea of even self-sacrifice for the greater good, and even the idea of offering oneself in the interest of shaping new possibilities. From the perspective of the deer, this is an energy that symbolizes the sacred balance among the forces of nature needed to sustain and nourish life. Within Native American hunting traditions, for example, there is a kind of reciprocal interplay between hunter and prey, whereby the hunt is carried out in a sacred manner with the permission and cooperation of the deer, on the understanding that the deer's giveaway of its own life will be treated wisely and respectfully. The deer gives its life on condition that nothing is wasted. Its life would be given to sustain other lives through the careful and wise use of all it had to give. Within that ancient tradition, the deer is a source of life and thus had to be treated with reverence. Similarly, the sun is the source of life, the generative power that is central to the promulgation of life, and the deer was seen as a carrier for the sun. In Aztec mythology, an ancestral creator couple known as Lord and Lady Wendir were seen as the original source of all sustenance and fertility. This can also be seen in a central Mexican legend, which tells of a two-headed deer that was shot and impregnated by Mixcoatl, god of the Milky Way and the hunt. In this legend, the deer transforms into a woman who gives birth to the great life-generating deity Quetzalcoatl, who in turn was instrumental in the creation of humankind. So the deer is really connected to all forms of life and can even be seen in images where a deer is marked by symbols of all 20 of the calendrical day signs. So all these ideas, the creative shaping of new possibilities, the reciprocal exchange, the idea of negotiation towards the greater good, these are all part of this current tricino. And it seems to me that the shift in these directions is quite noticeable at this time. As everyone knows, we are still in the middle of the pandemic, and the number of cases and deaths is mind-bogglingly high, but immunization efforts have cranked up significantly recently. On the first day of this tricino came the announcement that Johnson & Johnson has just produced a single-shot vaccine that has been found to be even more safe and effective than others. On the second day, Tula Mat, President Biden announced that 50 million doses of vaccines have been given in the U.S., well on track to meeting his promise of delivering at least 100 doses within the first 100 days of his presidency. On that same day came the announcement that the parents of 105 of the 611 immigrant children that were separated from their parents during the previous administration have been found, and they're working hard to find the rest. We heard that through much of the previous tricino, Texas suffered significantly from a devastating winter storm that left millions without power or heat or water. There were reports that some 29 million people were struggling to survive, and many did not make it through. During all that, the problematic nature of the infrastructure and many long-standing issues within different communities were brought to light. And now that the storm has passed, the state is now going through the process of assessing how to deal with the fallout on multiple levels. That idea of sacrifice and reconciliation that so often shows itself at this time definitely applies here. What happened to Texas is sure to become a major factor in shaping Joe Biden's climate-related agenda as they move forward in this regard. He flew to Texas to assess the situation yesterday, which would have been Friday. And on another note, on that same day, which was 3 Muluk, the activation of water, or the activation of purification, we learned that the Manhattan District Attorney's Office received the dumpster's long-awaited tax returns and related records, so that their investigation into a number of potential crimes in that regard can now really move forward, even though he and other Republicans are still trying to divert attention from this. A few days ago, Michael Cohen predicted that he is sure that indictments against the dumpster and many of his associates will come from this sooner rather than later. At the same time, we heard that militarily, the U.S. carried out an airstrike targeting Iran-backed militias in Syria, signaling that they have had enough of rockets being fired on U.S. installations and embassies in that region. So, more reciprocity, it seems. On this fourth day, as I am recording this, it's 4 Oak, which is a burner day in the calendar, a sort of extra push or boost point. The day began with the approval of the pandemic relief bill by the U.S. House of Representatives, which could infuse a considerable amount of cash into a struggling economy. This means that much of the discussion and negotiation over this bill now shifts to the U.S. Senate in the middle of this tracina. But this is an optimal period for negotiation, so hopefully they will be able to push it through. As I mentioned in my horoscope blog, the sixth day of this period, called 6 Ebb, is generally a stabilizing type of energy aligned with restorative vitality. This is coming in on March 1st, coinciding at this time with the start of Women's History Month in the U.S., with this year's theme being Refusing to be Silenced, a continuation of the celebration of women's suffrage. I'm not going to go through every single day of this tracina since they are all outlined in the blog, but a few other points of note include 8 Ish on March 3rd. This is the resurrecting jaguar force associated with Santo Mundo, a special Maya day devoted to the celebration of the earth and its sacred mysteries. The jaguar is very much an earth magic type of force, so this would be a day very harmonious for any jaguar-born individuals or anyone deeply connected with earth energies. As it happens, this is the UN's World Wildlife Day, devoted to celebrating and raising awareness of the world's wild animals and plants. This year's theme is Forests and Livelihoods, Sustaining People and Planet, oriented around celebrating the livelihoods of communities who rely on forests and the value of these ecosystems for both wildlife and all of humanity. The UN's goal is to raise awareness of the multitude of benefits of wildlife to people, and to give direct attention to the threats they're facing and the urgent need for governments, civil society, private sector actors and individuals to add their voices and take actions to help conserve and sustain wildlife. I now live in an area where there is much more overlap between the natural world and human development than where I used to live in the city. It's not unusual to see deer around here on a daily basis. Bears are not uncommon, and one always has to be on the lookout for an occasional cougar. Eagles often do aerial ballets in this area, which is stunning to watch. I often wonder what is going to happen to all these glorious creatures as human beings continue to encroach on nature. So much has been lost already. The World Wildlife Day website tells us that between 200 and 350 million people live within or adjacent to forested areas around the world, relying on the various ecosystem services provided by forest and forest species for their livelihoods and to cover their most basic needs, including food, shelter, energy, and medicines. They note that indigenous peoples and local communities are at the forefront of the symbiotic relationship between humans and forest, forest-dwelling wildlife species, and the ecosystem services they provide, and that roughly 28% of the world's land surface is currently managed by indigenous peoples, including some of the most ecologically intact forests on the planet. These spaces are not only central to their economic and personal well-being, but also to their cultural identities. And as they put it, with regard to the situation that we are all currently in, forests, forest species, and the livelihoods that depend on them currently find themselves at the crossroads of multiple planetary crises, from climate change to biodiversity loss and the health, social, and economic impacts of the pandemic. So World Wildlife Day is one avenue for highlighting and celebrating the value of traditional practices and knowledge that can be called on to help with the establishment of more sustainable relationships between humans and these natural systems. This is a perfect fit for 8-ish and the Maya calendar's special Santo Mundo Day, devoted to the celebration of the earth and its sacred mysteries. The following day, March 4th, coincides with Nine Men, which has a tendency to be quite intense. At this time, it seems that more than a little March madness might be thrown into the mix, since many of the Quackenons are hanging on to the bizarre idea that the former so-called president will be sworn in under some obscure 19th century notion on that day, way too bizarre to spend any time on. But within this Stracina, we can see calendar round returns relating to two key events in American history. One is at the midpoint on 7 Ben, which is a self-generating personal authority type of energy, which will mark 3 calendar rounds exactly, which is 3 times 52 years, returning to exactly the same day plus month energies since the day when the Confederate Army General Robert E. Lee surrendered to the Union Army General Ulysses S. Grant at Appomattox Courthouse in early April of 1865, signaling the beginning of the end of the U.S. Civil War. So we're now in that zone when exactly the same energies that were in place at that time are now back again. In 1865, during the last 2 days of this Stracina, the emphasis was placed squarely on the idea of sacrifice. March 7th this year brings the calendar round return of the energies that were in place on that dreadful 12-Etsnab day in 1865 when President Abraham Lincoln was shot at Ford's Theater. That energy is one of those knife-edged kinds of energies that can be quite dazzling and attention-getting. It's represented by obsidian, which can be made into sharp knives or blades, and it has the potential to bring certain things to a definitive conclusion, or at the very least, really get your attention. The last time this was in place was when the first of the Dumpsters Super Spreader events was held last year, the one in Tulsa, when he tried to downplay or ignore the pandemic. Who knows how many people came down with COVID as a result of that one. The last day of this time frame, 13 Kawak or Transformational Storm, this can also be highly intense. So this will be the calendar round return of the energies that were in place in 1865 again on the day when Lincoln died. Currently, this will be International Women's Day, with this year's theme being Women in Leadership, Achieving an Equal Future in a COVID-19 World, with the emphasis being on celebrating the tremendous efforts by women and girls around the world in shaping a more equal future and recovery from the pandemic. Okay, before I close here, I'm going to shift attention away from current issues and such and share a story. But I should also provide the reminder for anyone listening to this from somewhere other than my website that you can find more information about all this in my Maya Count of Days horoscope by going to either whitepoppress.ca or mayacalendararts.com and clicking on horoscope blog. That site includes earlier podcasts, information on Maya Calendrix, posts on topics such as birth dates and energy cycling, and services that I provide such as Maya calendar-related birth charts, coaching services, energy tracking, and personalized artworks. Feel free, if you wish, to contact me if you have any questions. Contact information is in the websites as well as information on subscribing to the horoscope blog. I want to finish up here with something written over 400 years ago by someone else born on a Tulamat day, the same birth energy as Elvis. And as I share this, I will be answering the question that I asked at the outset about the best novel. The person I'm referring to here is Miguel de Cervantes, the novelist, playwright, and poet who wrote the extraordinary story of Don Quixote. Miguel de Cervantes is considered to be the most important and most celebrated figure, not only from the Spanish Golden Age, but in all of Spanish literature. His novel, Don Quixote, often labeled the first modern European novel, is seen as a founding work of Western literature. And yes, many do consider it to be the best literary work ever written. It is also said to be the second most translated book in the world after the Bible. Originally titled The Ingenious Nobleman, Sir Quixote of La Mancha, this is the story of an aging nobleman who has read so many stories about chivalry that he sets out on an old horse with his squire, Sancho Panza, by his side to become a knight errant. Since it seems that we could all use a little diversion these days, I invite you to settle back and enjoy some of the writings of a master storyteller whose work has not only held up over the centuries, but provides refreshment in a world that seems too often to have lost its way. A world that could use a considerable infusion of this kind of creativity, and yes, chivalry as well. I'm only going to read some snippets from chapter 1 to give you an idea, but here we go. From Don Quixote, chapter 1. In a village of La Mancha, the name of which I have no desire to call to mind, there lived not long since one of those gentlemen that keep a lance in the lance rack, an old buckler, a lean hack, and a greyhound for coursing. An olla of rather more beef than mutton, a salad on most nights, scraps on Saturdays, lentils on Fridays, and a pigeon or so extra on Sundays, made away with three quarters of his income. The rest of it went in a doublet of fine cloth and velvet breeches and shoes to match for holidays, while on weekdays he made a brave figure in his best homespun. He had in his house a housekeeper past 40, a niece under 20, and a lad for the field and marketplace, who used to saddle the hack as well as handle the billhook. The age of this gentleman of ours was bordering on 50. He was of a hardy habit, spare, gaunt-featured, a very early riser, and a great sportsman. They will have it his surname was Quijada or Quesada, for here there is some difference of opinion among the authors who write on the subject, although from reasonable conjectures it seems plain that he was called Quijana. This, however, is of little importance to our tale. It will be enough not to stray a hair's breadth from the truth in the telling of it. You must know, then, that the above-named gentleman, whenever he was at leisure, which was mostly all the year round, gave himself up to reading books of chivalry with such ardor and avidity that he almost entirely neglected the pursuit of his field sports, and even the management of his property. And to such a pitch did his eagerness and infatuation go that he sold many an acre of tillage land to buy books of chivalry to read, and brought home as many of them as he could get. There follows a passage about some of the books he was reading, with a favorite being Feliciano de Silva, whose complicated style and stories about courtships and cartels contained passages such as, quote, "The reason of the unreason with which my reason is afflicted so weakens my reason that with reason I murmur at your beauty." Then we're told that this voracious gentleman reader commended on the author's way of ending his book with the promise of an interminable adventure. Cervantes continues, "In short, he became so absorbed in his books that he spent his nights from sunset to sunrise, and his days from dawn to dark, poring over them. And what with little sleep and much reading, his brains got so dry that he lost his wits. His fancy grew full of what he used to read about in his books: enchantments, quarrels, battles, challenges, wounds, wooings, loves, agonies, and all sorts of impossible nonsense. and it so possessed his mind that the whole fabric of invention and fancy he read of was true, that to him no history in the world had more reality in it. In short, his wits being quite gone, he hit upon the strangest notion that ever madman in the world hit upon. And that was that he fancied it was right and requisite, as well for the support of his own honor as for the service of his country, that he should make a knight errant of himself, roaming the world over in full armor and on horseback in quest of adventures, and putting in practice himself all that he had read of as being the usual practices of knights errant, righting every kind of wrong, and exposing himself to peril and danger from which, in the issue, he was to reap eternal renown and fame. Already the poor man saw himself crowned by the might of his arm, emperor of Trebizond at least, and so led away by the intense enjoyment he found in these pleasant fancies, he set himself forthwith to put his scheme into execution. The first thing he did was to clean up some armor that had belonged to his great-grandfather and had been for ages lying forgotten in a corner, eaten with rust and covered with mildew. He scoured and polished it as best he could, but he perceived one great defect in it, that it had no closed helmet, nothing but a simple morion. This deficiency, however, his ingenuity supplied, for he contrived a kind of half-helmet of pasteboard which, fitted onto the morion, looked like a whole one. It is true that, in order to see if it was strong and fit to stand a cut, he drew his sword and gave it a couple of slashes, the first of which undid in an instant what had taken him a week to do. The ease with which he had knocked it to pieces disconcerted him somewhat, and to guard against that danger he set to work again, fixing bars of iron on the inside until he was satisfied with its strength, and then, not caring to try any more experiments with it, he passed it and adopted it as a helmet of the most perfect construction. Then he goes about renaming his old horse so that he was fit to be the bearer of a knight errant. And then he had to come up with a new name for himself, finally settling on Don Quixote of La Mancha. Cervantes continues. So then, his armor being furbished, his morion turned into a helmet, his hack christened, and he himself confirmed, he came to the conclusion that nothing more was needed now but to look out for a lady to be in love with. For a knight errant without love was like a tree without leaves or fruit, or a body without a soul. As he said to himself, if for my sins or by my good fortune I come across some giant hereabouts, a common occurrence with knights errant, and overthrow him in one onslaught, or cleave him asunder to the waist, or in short, vanquish and subdue him, will it not be well to have someone I may send him to as a present, that he may come in and fall on his knees before my sweet lady, and in a humble, submissive voice say, I am the giant Karakulyambo, lord of the island of Malandrenia, vanquished in single combat by the never sufficiently extolled knight Don Quixote of La Mancha, who has commanded me to present myself before your grace, that your highness dispose of me at your pleasure. Oh, how our good gentleman enjoyed the delivery of this speech, especially when he had thought of someone to call his lady. There was, so the story goes, in a village near his own, a very good-looking farm girl with whom he had been at one time in love, though, so far as is known, she never knew it, nor gave a thought to the matter. Her name was Aldonza Lorenzo, and upon her he thought fit to confer the title of Lady of His Thoughts. And after some search for a name which should not be out of harmony with her own, and should suggest and indicate that of a princess and great lady, he decided upon calling her Dulcinea del Toboso, she being of El Toboso, a name, to his mind, musical, uncommon, and significant, like all those he had already bestowed upon himself and the things belonging to him. And so on and on it goes, a story from another time, another place, a completely different reality. Well worth checking out if you wish to follow further down this lovely Don Quixote de la Mancha trail laid out by Cervantes. Born during this sun-in-hand Tresina, and doing everything he could in this novel to paint a portrait of someone who, above all, was in pursuit of perfection and harmony. You'll find a link to this story online in the podcast post. Enjoy the rest of the Tresina. Until next time, keep safe, be well. Love to you all.